Go Loud.
Argentina went and made a soybean deal with China about 4 minutes later. Just like buying the girl of your dreams something, and she goes off and shifts somebody else.
Someone on Fox News said that the UN should be bombed if they find out that someone did this on purpose.
That's not going to fix the escalator, but anyway.
No. I don't think we actually have a great run of Sheik presidents, and I don't want one.
Bad news for fans of Sheik everywhere as we come down heavily on Tough on Sheik, Tough on the Causes of Sheik.
Hello everybody, and welcome to A Few Scoops. Ciao Bella! We are international this week. I am currently on holidays in Sorrento in Italy. My name is Aoife Muir. I am an author and journalist, and my new documentary came out on BBC One this week called Stitched Up. And my co-host is the funniest man currently in Dublin, Colin Morgan.
Funniest man in this studio. Yeah, great to hear from you, Aoife. Hope the holiday's going well. Don't care. Good that you tested the microphone 4 minutes before the podcast began, discovered that it didn't have a USB connection. And that's why you sound like you were on the end of a tin can and string. But it's not about the sound quality. It's about the quality of being sound. Isn't that right?
Exactly. This is like my dedication. I'm taking time out of my holiday to record this podcast. So let's get into it. We're going to talk about the presidential election now. And just to note, as I said last week, for full transparency, I have been paid by Catherine Conley for some press strategy work. I'm currently on holidays in Italy, so I have not received any money. But I just want to keep mentioning it because I don't think it would be very ethical or honest not to mention it every time.
You're securing the crucial Italian.
The Italian diaspora. It's been nice not to have to think about work for a number of days. However, when things like this happen, my own obsession with politics gets the better of me. So the first thing I did this morning was get up and watch the debate on TikTok in a number of different clubs.
And where is your mam at this moment as we're recording?
She is out on a porch being sunburned to death because I'm recording the podcast. Last night, the first televised debate for the Irish presidential election took place on Virgin Media One with Kieran Cuddihy. This I found a wee bit different because it was kind of like an episode of The Tonight Show in that they were all sitting down and talking to Kieran Cuddihy rather than, you know, the stand-up shouting match that we're used to. As I was in Italy, I could only watch clips, and I have read two rundowns from RTE and The Examiner, both of which said if there was a winner, it was Catherine Conley, but it was quite a low-energy type of debate. What did you make of it, Colm?
Well, I think it is a good illustration. First of all, they talked about stuff that a president has no power over, but I don't think that's a problem, because what you want to do is find out if your president, and I'm being extremely stupid sounding here, knows stuff and can talk about things that happened. Like, it's a competency thing. Are they over their briefs? Are they in charge of the facts? Are they able to remember their past experience on this? So for me, it's kind of a competence exercise. And also, like, it's an important job. You know, we kind of forget that. Like it's a job that requires technical expertise in policy.
You're supposed to be in charge of the Constitution.
Yeah.
And technically head of the Defence Forces.
Yeah. And it's just a reminder that politics is a skill. Like, we're always lambasting politicians. It's fun. But it actually is a trade. Like, it's a thing you have to spend time doing and get good at.
And yeah, and I think the big challenge everyone was kind of saying was for Jim Gavin, this is his first time in this type of debate. He wasn't a politician. Both Catherine Conley and Heather Humphreys have served at different levels within local national government and national parliament. Heather specifically being a minister a number of times over. And the big thing both of the rundowns I read said that the issue for Heather Humphreys is going to be the fact that she has been in Fine Gael for such a long time. Fine Gael have failed on housing and health and homelessness and everything else. And it'll be hard for Heather to try and run for president with that hanging over, as well as Jim Gavin having no political experience at all. And someone texted me this morning and said, I think even my cats know that Jim Gavin was in the Defence Forces now. It seemed very clear that Jim Gavin was told by Fianna Fáil, you know, we have to talk about your career in the Defence Forces. It's what people would really admire about you, as well as the GAA. And then Heather Humphreys also talked about the fact that she was a credit union manager. I'm mad at the credit union, love the credit union, but it did seem like quite a low energy. There was no big knockdown in the debate. And this is only the first one.
But also, I think, so you're talking about Heather Humphreys being, you know, attached to Fine Gael. That never matters to most centrist voters. Like, in Ireland, we have a history of voting for people who are attached historically to failures in the past. So, like, the credit union... The credit union stuff, she should lean into that more. Like, that's what people... Yeah. Like, I felt that it was low on anecdote. Like, I thought Jim Gavin was strongest when talking about being in Dublin and knowing Dublin city centre and working in communities there. And also, Jim Gavin was chair of a citizens' assembly. Do you know what I mean? Like, you kind of forget that. Like, that's a job. And I think he should be talking about that. The big challenge for Catherine Connolly is her voters think, you know, she's perfect for the job. How many second preferences can she get? Because if even in 1990, Mary Robinson, we kind of remember it as this massive groundswell of voting for a new Ireland. But Brian Lenihan, even after a terrible campaign, won, I think it was 44% of first preferences. Mm-hmm. Like, he was in the lead on first preferences.
Yeah.
And the final tally at the end was only 51-49. So the challenge for Catherine Connolly is, can she convince enough people that, look, she's the working politician, so she's like on it, whereas Heather Humphreys looked a bit rusty, looked like she was kind of getting back onto an old tractor.
Heather Humphreys might have the cold, from what I saw. She seemed a bit under the weather. And for a lot of it, I actually noticed in the Examiner, they said she didn't talk at one point for over 8 minutes.
Yeah.
That she was just very, very quiet. But yeah, she has retired. That was the thing. She was out of politics. And remember, she wasn't Fine Gael's first choice either. She was put in because Mairead McGuinness had to step down due to her health reasons. So Heller wasn't even prepared. This wasn't even on her mind, yeah. I don't think.
I know people struggle through debates and they're not sparky and all of that. But if you just get over that, it is interesting to find out where people stand on particular positions and what they're like when slightly under pressure, because you have to imagine them then, how would they give X, Y, and Z speech in, I don't know, the UK Parliament or, you know, Béal na bláth or the wide range of jobs that they end up doing, you know, presenting Summer Stars medals to people who'd read a lot of books in the library. Do you know what I mean? Like,
exactly. So, or the BT Young Scientists, that's a big thing.
Like, I don't particularly want it to be particularly stormy, because they're just going to be shouting at each other over stuff they can do nothing about anyway, so.
Yeah, and I think we had an incredibly toxic presidential campaign 8 years ago, in which businessman Peter Casey, who claims he's from Derry, but I refuse to believe it, came second. And that was an incredibly toxic campaign in which the travelling community in Ireland were completely demonised to try and further someone's very withering political
career
they never took off in the first place.
Caught strays from a campaign that wasn't addressing any of their concerns in any other way. So it was...
Yeah, and I think it's always good to remind people that if a politician is telling you that someone with much less than you and much less than them is the problem, they probably actually don't have many workable policies.
One other thing, I know she wasn't there, Maria Steen, maybe since we last spoke, she got the 18 Oireachtas nominees, and she's been given out that she's been kept out of the campaign, even though she didn't start on time. Sometimes these things are literally a matter of logistics. If you don't start in time, then you can't blame. You know, bad things happen when you're in a hurry. That's when I always drop stuff, when I'm late. So I think she would have, in terms of the other strong ideological force, would have made a spikier debate last night, I think.
Absolutely, she would have. And I would say, for someone who did not meet the Democratic mean, she has been given an outsized level of press coverage. And I highly doubt this is the last we've heard from Maria Steen. But just for a reminder, she needed 20 signatures. She got 18. That is how our democracy works. No one kept her out. She's blasted the democratic process. However, the fact remains that she was on the losing side when it came to referendums on women's health there. and equal marriage. And that might have more to do with why people didn't want to back her rather than a big conspiracy to keep her out. There has been much made about the fact that she arrived at the Oireachtas with a 20,000 euro handbag, an Hermes Kelly bag, which, if anyone has ever watched Sex and the City, plays a large role in one episode. I tend to hate coverage to do with politicians' clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it when they did to Jennifer Carol McNeil. I don't like it when they talked about Theresa May's shoes. I don't really give a shit what politicians wear. Gino Kenny from People Before Profit got a lot of grief because he was wearing a cycling top in the convention center a couple of years ago because he had cycled into work. What a politician wears is so far down the level of importance. I would say, as someone who has advised politicians before in a paid capacity, bringing a 20,000 euro handbag to anywhere where you're fronting the press is a bad idea. But I don't think it's the worst thing about her, and I don't think it's the reason that she lost this campaign. And I would like to see less said about women's clothes and politicians' clothes in general, but truly maybe a blind spot that Maria Steen, one of many blind spots Maria Steen has in bringing that handbag.
They are a very stylish couple, though.
They actually are. They do cut a very chic type of image, but we're not electing presidents on their chicness because I don't think we actually have a great run of chic presidents, and I don't want one. We don't want that.
Bad news for fans of chic everywhere as we come down heavily on Tough on Chic, Tough on the Causes of Chic.
Ireland is reeling this week from two killings that have taken place in different parts of the country within two separate families. On Saturday, the bodies of Krzysztof Czachowski and his 5-year-old daughter, Julia, were found in their home at Finglas, believed from reports to be found by their girl's mother, Aga. She returned home from work at around 8 p.m. To the house in Heathfield Terrace. Neighbours called emergency services when they heard screaming at the horrific discovery. The father was a 50-year-old busman. He was found near the stairs, and sources said to the Irish Examiner that they believe it was a suicide. The little girl was found in an upstairs bedroom with no obvious sources of violence. Neighbours around Finglas, which is a very tight-knit community, said that the father and the girl were often in the neighbourhood on the playground, which was opposite their house where they had lived for a number of years. Gardaí are speaking to the mother, and they're trying to build up a picture of what was going on in the father's life in recent weeks and months. It is believed that Gardaí are going to contact his work colleagues in the coach and bus service that he works for. But it very much appears that the family and the neighbourhood around Finglas are absolutely reeling. A full autopsy will take place, and this is a live case, and there is an incident room established in Finglas Garda station. So we're not going to speculate. We don't know what happened here, but we do know that the girl's grandmother had only recently returned home to Poland after a lengthy stay over the summer. They were well known among the community and appeared everything was normal before this. So the justice minister said that the investigation will continue and offered his condolences as well. But it is absolutely horrific for the people who knew this family. And the little girl was a senior infant in Tyrrelltown in West Dublin. And I can't imagine what it's going to be like for her wee friends as well.
And further absolute horrific news then from County Louth near Tallinstown. Parents Mark and Louise O'Connor, who were in their 50s, and their son Evan, who was in his 20s, victims of a stabbing attack in their home. Postmortems on all three victims will be happening today. That's Tuesday. That's according to Gardaí. This, again, it's a level of horrifying that absolutely defies any kind of commentary or speculation. Just one thing we should do with all of these things is remember the people. And Mark and Louise O'Connor were founder parents of the Drogheda Abacus Special School. And they posted on their Facebook page, "It is with deepest sadness that we heard the news today of the sudden passing of Mark, Louise and Evan O'Connor. As I say, they were founder parents of the Drogheda Abacus Special School, and Evan, one of the first two children to attend Abacus on day one. Mark and Louise were passionate advocates for their son, Evan, and for all autistic people. Mark was a board member of Autism Support Louth and Meath and was a professional advocate for the rights of people with disabilities in his career. As they say here, many families owe them a debt of gratitude. They campaigned and lobbied and fundraised for the school and youth clubs and will always be remembered for their legacy to Abacus and to autistic people. And Evan, the son, attended Abacus for 14 years. And they say here, he grew up with us. And it's just a reminder, like, the lives that are destroyed, the impact, like, the work that these people did. That's how we should, among all the reasons for remembering them, here's one reason.
Yeah.
And all of these murders, these are real people's lives and the people around them that have been shattered.
Yeah, and I would just ask as well, and I think Gardaí were forced to say this at the time, but this is not the time for speculation or rumours of what people have heard. Gardaí asked people to stop spreading misinformation in the wake of what happened. Someone has been arrested. The police arrived very early in the morning. Gardaí, I believe, were on the scene before 10 a.m. A man has been arrested. But Gardaí say it's very early in the investigation. It's too soon to say what the motivation was, and autopsies will take place. But again, in the same vein of what happened in Finglas, no one needs your hot take.
Mm.
And there are families at the end of this.
I know people. Yeah. At the end of this. So, like, some people speculate for glib reasons. I know people speculate because they want to get some sort of
people want
understanding answers. Because when something horrible happens, you're like, I need to know it's in some sort of context and it won't happen to me. But just wait. Everybody just wait. Everything emerges sometimes in a matter of days. So just leave the people who are close to the people who've died to process it without our takes.
September marks the week every year when the United Nations General Assembly meets. It begins in September. I have been there before, along with the Taoiseach and a lot of other political correspondents. It's high-level meetings in which they discuss conflicts across the world, climate change, and try to come to some sort of agreements to stop the world burning down around us.
In New York for UN week, that first week, So this is when everybody's there, like the couple of weeks in September, every country sends a leader or whoever's the highest up available to go.
Mm-hmm.
What does it do? Do you get a sense when you go there, does stuff come out of it? Obviously, this isn't a movie. It's going to be lots of speeches, but does it set the tone for the year? Have people forgotten it by November? Is it like the first day of the Dáil where they kind of say, here's the stuff we're going to be dealing with over the next 300 days?
They often say that the speeches are actually the most impractical part of it, and most of the general deals that get done are kind of on the sidelines. So we know that if you can get someone face-to-face, even for 5 minutes as two political leaders, much more fruitful things tend to happen.
Yeah.
So it'll be the diplomacy behind the scenes is what this whole week is about. It's not necessarily about those speeches. Trump and Netanyahu love it because they get to shite on for an hour about what they think. But what actually practically happens is on the sidelines. So, you know, I've been there a few times and New York is chock-a-block. Every street is cordoned off and you're in these huge hotels and there's just diplomats everywhere. And a lot of those conversations are very boring. They could be about tariffs or tax. They could be about immigration and different visas. But a lot of it takes place on the sidelines. It was very important to Latin America this year, very important to Ukraine this year. Vladimir Zelensky said he was surprised by the shift in Trump's tone on Ukraine. And he said he believes that it means the US will stand by his country as it repels the Russian invasion. And it does very much seem that Trump knows now that Putin is not listening to him.
Yeah.
And it's those types of things that people will take away from it.
And also, like, Colombia, I think, was complaining about U.S. bombing suspected drugs smugglers in the Caribbean. People. Brazil have a big beef, literally and figuratively, with the U.S. over U.S. Beef. Support for Bolsonaro. The U.S., I think, bailed out Argentina, Argentinian economy, and then Argentina went and made a soybean deal with China about 4 minutes later. So, just like, it was literally like buying the girl of your dreams something and she goes off and shifts somebody else. So stuff happens, like it's an enormous faff, but without it, less stuff would happen. Is that the way? Is that my summation of the UN? Is that correct?
Yeah, all diplomacy is very boring with a lot of waiting around and a lot of money spent. And that's basically what the UN is at this point. The last 8 years have been dominated usually by US President Donald Trump and whatever, without putting too glib a point on whatever weird shit he has been getting up to when he's there. This year's opening meeting was dominated by Trump because as himself and the First Lady, Melania, were walking up an escalator, the escalator stopped midway. We've all been to an airport. We've all been to a shopping center. This happens. Happens all the time. Trump was very annoyed about the escalator. And then Fox News, the right-wing Republican news outlet in America, claimed that this was an attempt to sabotage the president. At one point, someone on Fox News said that the UN should be bombed if they found out that someone did this on purpose.
That's not going to fix Trump the escalator, but anyway.
No. Trump brought it up during his address to the UN. So this is an address where like the most powerful people in the world talk about how they're going to fight climate change and war in Gaza. And Trump talked about the escalator. And then the teleprompter stopped working and Trump was unable to do a speech without reading the teleprompter. So when that stopped working, he said he was being sabotaged by that as well. There was an investigation within the UN about what happened, and it turned out both things were the fault of Trump's own team. A photographer for Trump hit the emergency stop button on the escalator, and one of Trump's team was still editing the teleprompter when it stopped working.
What you're saying there is the deep state are within Trump's camp and he's under attack from within. I don't see any reassurance. Yeah. If I was Trump, I would find that even scarier, that that's how this goes all the way to the top.
Yeah, foisted by their own petard, as it was. So Trump was allocated 5 minutes for his speech. He went on for 57 minutes. He said, I ended 7 wars. No evidence or proof given for this. So I ended 7 wars, dealt with the leaders of each and every one of these countries. I never even received a phone call from the United Nations offering to help in finalizing the deal. He said the UN wasn't even coming close to living up to its potential.
He also told Europe that your countries are going to hell. That's my president. That was the day that Donald Trump became president. That kind of statesmanlike stuff.
Did he say why they were going to hell?
I think it's probably immigration. I don't think it's like because we have too much maternity leave, but he probably believes that as well. So he said, it's time to end the failed experiment of open borders. You have to end it now. I can tell you, I'm really good at this stuff. Your countries are going to hell. So I presume when he says, I'm really good at this stuff, it's border walls, which he famously built like 0.01%. They did have a section of wall, I think, between Texas and Mexico. And I think you can just go around it. Like,
so this month meeting was obviously dominated by the war in Gaza, or the genocide, as Ireland has labelled it, but not to the point that anything was actually really done. To make it clear, this meeting takes place in New York. If Benjamin Netanyahu had have had to land in any other different country, he could have been arrested because there is an international arrest warrant out for Benjamin Netanyahu, which America doesn't follow, neither would the UK, for instance. However, European countries and other people who adhere to that court order should be arresting Benjamin Netanyahu if he ever landed in their country. What we did see, however, was when Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu took to the stage, would we say hundreds, maybe dozens?
I'd say dozens.
Anyway,
yeah.
lots and lots of people walked out, countries refusing to listen to Benjamin Netanyahu and what he has to say.
Micheál Martin was on shortly after him, was he?
He was in the green room. He was just on after Netanyahu, so he didn't. People were asking whether Micheál Martin walked out, but Micheál was in a different room prepping for his speech, so there was no need or ability for Micheál Martin to walk out.
While he was there, Netanyahu met Trump for a bigger meeting, and as of this morning, there are headlines about another Gaza peace deal, which, would it be correct to say it is less awful than the Gaza Riviera one?
Slightly less awful. It's a 20-point peace plan aimed, as the White House says, at bringing an immediate end to the war in Gaza, which they say began on the 7th of October. But I think most people in Ireland and all colonized people would know that it didn't start on the October the 7th. A number of the points are that Gaza will be a de-radicalized, terror-free zone that does not pose a threat to its neighbors. Who decides what the terror-free zone is not specified. Gaza will be redeveloped for the benefit of the people of Gaza. If both sides agree to the proposal, the war will immediately end. Israeli forces will withdraw, and both sides will release hostages and prisoners. Within 72 hours of Israel publicly accepting, all hostages, alive and deceased, will be returned. 250 life sentence prisoners plus 1,700 Gazans who were detained after October 7th, including all women and children detained in that context, would be released. Again, October 7th being key here. Israel has been kidnapping people for quite a long time before October 7th. Entry of distribution of aid into the Gaza Strip will proceed without interference. And on it goes. No one will be forced to leave Gaza, and those who wish to leave will be free to do so and free to return. The United States will work with Arab and international partners to develop a temporary international stabilization force known as the ISF. I'm sure there's no issues there. So I read a response to this by a Palestinian. People in Palestine are pretty pissed off.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you read down through it, it almost acts like this is somehow a peace plan between Palestinians that everybody's just in to kind of help them out. It seems to act as if the Israeli Defense Forces are not the ones who are currently bombing Gaza. Like, it's a weird kind of a document.
Just for a response from Benjamin Netanyahu, he said that the IDF will remain in most of the territory as part of the plan drawn up by Trump. So, to be clear, his IDF are not planning on leaving. And he said that Israel did absolutely not agree to a Palestinian state. He said, we are firmly opposed to a Palestinian state. Trump understands our position. Such a move will be a huge reward for terror and a danger to the state of Israel. And then his far-right finance minister said, in my estimation, this will also end in tears. Our children will be forced to fight in Gaza again.
Yeah, nobody's...
This is not a country who wants peace.
Yeah.
These are not people who want peace. They don't want Trump's peace plan because they want to take over Palestine. And just to put it in the... I know we talk about politics and diplomacy, but as of today, Tuesday, 453 people, including 150 children, have died of famine and man-made malnutrition in Gaza. So while people squabble at the UN and while Benjamin Netanyahu pretends that he wants peace, his ministers are saying that that's not the case, that they're never going to recognize Palestine. And all these states and all these superpowers are watching on while Trump or Trump's administration makes up these peace plans that Netanyahu doesn't even want.
Yeah.
Like, how are we supposed to negotiate if one side doesn't want peace?
And there's a pattern here. Like, there was a peace plan, or there was talk of a peace plan when Trump met Putin in Alaska earlier in the year. Bullet points came out of that as well, too. But they're always so vague. Like, if you read point 10, many thoughtful investment proposals and exciting development ideas have been crafted by well-meaning international groups and will be considered to synthesize the security and governance frameworks to attract and facilitate these investments. What?
It sounds like they're going to build a resort on the bodies of dead Gazan children.
Yeah, and this stuff, it really, a lot of it feels like it's written by a mixture of Trump speak and AI, and it's vague enough that nobody feels bound by it. I mean, maybe this is the initial step that requires further detailed steps, but ultimately, let's not get away from the fact that an entire country has been leveled, and then we're talking about peace in the ruins, as if the ruins just happened, as if it was a volcano. It's very strange.
Yeah, and just to add to this, a number of states like the UK and Canada have recognized Palestine as a state in the last couple of weeks, joining places like Spain and Ireland, and yet nothing is happening. The UK recognized Palestine as a state and continues to fund the military war machine there. And it's very, very hard to find hope amid a genocide, but the Irish people at least continue in their steadfastness. I know in Cork, the Cork Palestinian Solidarity Campaign had marched every week now for well over a year.
Yeah, and as a man from Cork, Tadhg Hickey is on one of the boats on the flotilla, currently being guarded, sort of, would you say, guarded by a combination of the Greek and Italian navies.
Yeah. Community will save us all.
Mm.
Okay, will we move on? This is a quick one I just wanted to add because it is very much in my own personal wee house. The north of Ireland, much like places in England currently and in Dublin, has been taken over by a very loud minority of far-right actors who spread misinformation to prey on vulnerable working-class communities like my own and where I came from. They say that the north is being taken over by refugees and migrants and other people who were not born here, or they say don't belong. And as usual, it has been found that they are lying. and spewing anti-immigration bile without any evidence whatsoever. And I would just like to note that the West Belfast MLA, Jerry Carroll, from People for Profit, has unearthed new figures that says the population of the North has grown by less than 0.4%. It shows that between mid-2023 and mid-2024, the net population of the North increased by just 7,500 across the North's 11 council areas. Newry, Mourne and Down saw its population fall, and Belfast City Council only got 1,800 new residents. Derry and Strabane went up 1,500, Lisburn and Castlereagh 847, and Antrim and Newton Abbey 802. The seven remaining council areas had even smaller increases. And Jerry Carroll criticised the groups behind the protests. He said that they are crying foul about mass migration. For some time, unionist parties in the far right have been crying foul about mass migration and how we are being overwhelmed with people who decide to live here. This is absolutely not the case, and the figures show that. We've actually had a tiny increase in population growth. And I just wanted to point this out, that these people rarely ever have facts on their side. Their lies about crime in ethnic minority groups, their lies about mass migration, always are proven not to be true. The reason that you are struggling in your life and it is hard to make money and you feel like you can't buy a house or find a school place for your child who needs to go to special school, none of that has to do with immigration. We are not being overrun by these people. This is what the far right do to prey on vulnerable people, and we are so much stronger together. And remember, as I said before, if a politician is telling you that the more vulnerable person is the reason your life is shit, it's probably because that politician doesn't have any workable policy.
There you go. Go the North.
Yeah, people not coming there is the, the end of that story. Colin, hit me with some good news.
Good news. We have, close to my heart, the word dad bod has entered the Merriam-Webster dictionary. Among lots of other words. It's good to see my people being seen and heard, that underreported constituency of men in their 40s. My life, I now see it in front of me. For those of you who's first heard the word dad bod, let me just bring up the... I don't have the Merriam... Because you have to pay for the Merriam-Webster dictionary. This is their press release. So, you know, like the book itself is... we're not at that stage yet. We're not buying books as research. But it's a slang term, for anyone who doesn't know, for a male physique that's slightly pudgy and spudgy, a soft, rounder midsection, you know, just comfortable and lived a life. It's often the dad bod is often seen. Celebrities are pictured in their dad bods, having their photograph taken with telephoto lenses from a distance. So it's always blurry, the blurry dad bod. So that's made it into the most recent edition of the Merriam-Webster dictionary. So I'm pleased about that. And very quick good news. The Liberties is now, every year they go, what's the world's coolest neighbourhoods? And they usually have one from Dublin.
It's no coincidence that the Liberties is where I live. Yep. Now being named one of the coolest neighbourhoods in the world.
Exactly, yeah. It's a Time Out magazine every year. So Dublin Age was 2021, Stonybatter 2022, 2023 was Smithfield, Inchicore was 2024. I thought they were heading west with rents. I thought eventually like Longford would be the coolest neighbourhood. But they've gone back to the Liberties and, you know, the general vibrancy, places that used to be people's houses now turned into hotels, that kind of thing.
A lot of gentrification, yeah, that we've talked about before. But it is a great community with great people. I love where I live. Wouldn't change it for the world unless I get evicted because I can't afford it anymore.
Yeah, well, you won't be able to now because it's coolest neighbourhood. So the rent, your rent's about to go up. And then, usually do a quick wrap-up on sport. We won a load of medals at the World Rowing Championships. Woo! I love watching us win medals in things that are not always saluted. But thanks to the O'Donovan brothers in previous years, rowing is a big deal in our media landscape. But we have Fiona Murta in the women's single scull, which that's the type of boat. It doesn't mean you knock it back in one. Fintan McCarthy and Max Cremin in the mixed double sculls. And then there was two bronzes, Fintan McCarthy and Philip Doyle in the men's double sculls and Jake McCarthy in the lightweight men's single sculls. Well done, the rowers.
Is that the pull like a dog people?
The descendants, well, not the descendants, the people who came after, the pull like a dog people, redefining sporting interviews for future life. And of course, we won the Ryder Cup, but that's different. That's just millionaires shouting at each other and then other millionaires shouting at them when they're golfing. And that's your mom in the background.
Yeah, it's my mom dropping a bottle of sun cream.
And one more bit of good news. We have our listener good news every week we ask people to send in their bits of good news to a few scoops at goloudnow.com. This email says, "Hi, Aoife and Colm. I'm enjoying the podcast each week on my way to work and wanted to share my good news. I'm recently back to work after a second maternity leave and bagged an internal move to a new team that I'm really excited about. The two kids are thriving in creche and we've just survived our first family holiday abroad. As four, yes, I completely understand the surviving holiday. People with small children, when they come back from holiday, how was the holiday? Oh, it was successful. Drama-free. That's how we do our holidays. And this person here says, miss you at infant jokes. We'll keep spreading the good word." Oh, thank you for putting that plug in at the end of that email. I have to read it out, so therefore I probably have to mention that this Friday, my comedy club for mams and dads and minders and affiliates who have small babies is on a Friday morning in the Patriots Inn in Kilmainham. So basically, it's comedy for grown-ups and the babies can play on the ground in front. There are mats there. So go check that out. Ticket Taylor, Colm O'Regan, you'll find tickets for that. But I would never use this platform to plug something so crass as a comedy night or indeed morning for people with babies. Anyway, so any comments that you have, do send them to a few scoops at goloudnow.com and they might be your good news or general feedback. We'd love to hear it. Keep the lovely Spotify comments coming in. There's some lovely reviews coming in on our episodes there and also on Apple Podcasts as well too, or wherever you get your podcasts. Do leave us a subscribe and a like and a comment if you are moved to do so. But that's it from this week for A Few Scoops from me, Colm O'Regan, and Aoife Moore, who, in fairness to her, is off on her holidays and still dialed in. She's heading off to catch a bus at the moment with her mam for, no doubt, a day of gallivanting in Sorrento. Some of us have to work, but we'll be back and hope it rains. No, we won't. We hope she has lovely weather. We will see you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.